I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of
everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. I think we've got some exciting topics coming your way this evening. We're going to be talking about stargates and the Atlaroth from Atlantis, the Akashic Record, monatomics, and maybe even get into some of the secrets of alchemy. But before we get into all of that, I'd like to kick off the program in our usual manner by doing a little bit of Japa Yoga, which is a little bit of mantra repetition. That'll be led by Sri Swami Satchidananda. So if the guys in the booth would play that short clip now, that would be much appreciated.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Hari.
Hari 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 Hari. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om Hari Om Hari Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari
Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari
Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari
Om Hari Om Hari Hari Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari
Hari Hari Om
Hari Om
Om Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari
Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Hari Om Hari
Hari Hari Om
Hari 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 Om
Om Hari 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 Om
Hari
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 Om Hari Om Hari Om Om Hari Om Hari Om
Om
Hari 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 Om
Om
Hari Om Hari Om
Om
Hari 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 Om
Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om
Om
Hari Om Hari Om Hari Hari
Om
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Om.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Om.
Hari.
Yes, that was Sri Swami Satchidananda, founder of the Integral Yoga Institutes, and that was a clip from back in the 1970s. I'd like to now give my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET Yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and although thought to be accurate, is provided as is and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET Yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. And if you're a new listener to ET Yoga, I should also let you know that I applaud your efforts to distance yourself from mainstream medical as much as humanly possible. And I'd like to borrow a page from Barbara Marciniak channeling Pleiadian information when she states that your ability to co-create should never be underestimated because you are powerful beyond your imaginings and are simply in the process of remembering this now. Everything is choice. And when you choose to focus rather on that which does not serve you, you are ordering from the cosmic waiter another dish of the same unpleasant nature. Choose to focus on that which is delightful, and you're ordering a myriad of delights on a silver platter. Energy goes where energy flows. And I might also add that in today's world, there's certainly a lot of issues concerning immune systems. And clearly, ET Yoga is primarily about self-realization and sharing information of a spiritual journey. And I like to call ET Yoga the yoga of belief. And part of that belief is that not only is self-realization in the process important, but also maintaining and creating excellent health is very important. And in this regard, the best tip I can pass on about heightening your immune system is a product called Amrit Kalash, and that's Amritkalash. And Dr. Yuki Nina, a Japanese researcher, studied more than 500 different antioxidants over a period of 30 years. And he found the most powerful and effective antioxidant of all those tested is an ancient Ayurvedic herbal preparation called Amrit Kalash. Research shows that the antioxidant capabilities of Amrit Kalash are at least 25,000 times more powerful than those of vitamin C and E. And taking it is like supplying you with a Star Wars deflective shield. And this astounding ambrosia is composed of 44 different herbs and fruits that seem to work synergistically, enhancing the natural strength of one another's antioxidants. And it's also called a rasayana, or that which negates old age and disease. Highly recommend this product, especially you know, in these times when you hear about all these flus and things going around. And as Barbara Marciniak would say, which some people are concerned about the effects of chemtrails, and her question is always, how strong is your immune system? Because those with the very strong immune systems are pretty much unaffected. I'd like to, at this time, give my thanks and appreciation to the ET Yoga listening audience just for being you. As Bashar would say, you're already making the optimum difference in this world just by being here, and others find out about the difference you're making when you're doing your passion. And I give special thanks to those listeners who do take the time to email me, and you can do that at paperfungo@yahoo.ca. That's P-A-P-E-R-F-U-N-G-O, paperfungo@yahoo.ca. And I much like to hear about your successes with any ideas, concepts, or techniques that you've heard on the ET Yoga program. I'm also very open to suggestions concerning program content, and I'm also available to answer any questions concerning topics I bring up on the ET Yoga program. I'm also open to any inaccuracies that I may present on this program so that I may present you with the best possible information concerning the topics that come up. And for tonight's program, I kind of generally have a theme that comes to mind during the week, and then I follow that excitement to its natural conclusion. And I started off thinking about Atlantis and the whole Atlantean experience. And I guess we are hearing rumors that it's highly possible that the finds down in Antarctica at the present is Atlantis. Of course, Atlantis covered a large area. We all know that underneath the, or near the Bimini area, south of Florida, definitely they have found pyramidal shapes and aspects of Atlantis there as well. You can go on YouTube and search that out because there's some amazing pictures. And one of the things that always appealed to me about the tales about Atlantis were tales about the Atlara. And the sect of scientist priests were referred to as the Atlara in Atlantis. And the Atlara maintained the highest standards of consciousness and were able to continue vibrating at very high frequencies of consciousness at and above the 12th dimensional light and energy, remaining very pure and resonant with the true oneness concept of the Creator God. They sustained higher dimensional telepathic contact with advanced space brethren from the Pleiades, Arcturus, Andromeda, and Cirrus. The Atlara priests were highly disciplined, revered, and traditionally separate, above and exempt from governmental controls, and thus kept the knowledge and senior management of crystal technology largely in the wise and benevolent hands of the sect. Although these were, and they were, some technicians and crystal energies from the Poseidon populace involved who were not in the Atlara sect. Now, the scientist priests of the Atlara were both male and female and were capable of great lifespans, both through the regeneration of mind power and through the technology of the same in the Temple of Rejuvenation. Many lived in the same biology for 6,000 years, some to 12,000 years. Thus was the technology preserved through this holy sect, and many brilliant souls were among these. The entities you know as Galileo, Isaac Newton, Einstein, Tesla, Edison, Marcel Vogel, and Da Vinci were among the Atlara. Tiberon and Honoron were part of this group of scientist priests who lived very long lifetimes. And the use of genetically engineered servant classes led to the great rift between the Law of One and the Sons of Belial. The latter, which became so engrossed and hardened in the materialistic ambitions of the industrial machine that they lost sight of the spiritual ethics that had prevailed over the continent of Atlantis in the Golden Era. Literally, hundreds of thousands of hybrid mutations were created to work the fields, and monstrosities were created with controlled minds to robotically do the bidding of their masters. Souls became trapped in clone bodies, termed things and others, with genetic lobotomies and modified sexuality and emotional abilities. Many who were trapped in monstrous or subintelligent androgynous human bodies still carry that horrendous pain of being imprisoned in physical embodiments that allowed for no advanced learning, spiritual growth, or emotional expansion. The beings you refer to as Sasquatch are remnants of human gorilla genetic engineered mutants created for the heavy labor by the Aryans. And I thought it was also particularly interesting to note that the Atlanteans were really big on horses. Horses were very important in the Atlantis times. And a racetrack for horses actually ran around the complete circumference of one of the islands. And the Egyptians negotiated peaceful trade agreements with the Tauri, T-A-U-R-I, who were the descendants of the survivors of the inundation of Atlantis. And the Tauri had lost most of the knowledge of their past, but maintained their greatest treasure, which was their horses. And the Tauri gave birth to many of the nomadic tribes of the southeastern European steppes, and they were the horse breeders of the mighty war horse of the dawn. And the Egyptians, they transplanted horses, a living treasure of Atlantis, back to Egypt, and by carefully breeding the little horses from the Azovian steppes, which were the remnants of the magnificent mounts of the Atlantean kings, the Egyptians developed the elegant Arabian horse. And I think it's also interesting to note that one of the reasons that this topic came up for me about Atlantis was that apparently 70% of the people who are now incarnated on this earth experienced physicality in Atlantis. And we're also seeing the same exact sort of splits that were in philosophy that were occurring then, such as the segment of our population that seems destined towards this transhumanist agenda and this addiction to technologies, as opposed to the more spiritually, more naturally and nature-oriented aspects of our society. And one of the names I mentioned there was a guy named Marcel Vogel as one of the Atlera. And I should mention to you that Vogel knew that the real origin of illness is in the etheric body. Although the body or emotions sustain a trauma, the etheric body holds the memory of physical or emotional injury, and it can become stagnant, distorted, or stuck. And the result of this unstable or blocked energy is illness. He discovered that crystals are the common thread in healing that ties together energy, illness, and problems in the etheric body. And whenever light from the higher realms comes into a person's body, the light gets refracted if the etheric body is not stable. And this can cause illness. And the Vogel cut crystal gives the user immediate access to the etheric body and stabilizes it, allowing light from the higher realms to enter. Also, a matrix or template of perfection already exists inside the etheric body. So even when there is physical or emotional trauma, the matrix still exists and can be brought back to optimum conditions by the use of Vogel-cut crystals. And I really highly suggest, if you're interested in this type of healing, to check out Marcel Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. And it's not the exact technologies that were used in Atlantis, but very, very close and very, very effective. I might add that they are also highly expensive, and probably one of the reasons why I tend to navigate more towards the Andara crystal, that's A-N-D-A-R-A, as I find that they are also quite amazing. Now, as well as linking up the ideas of the Atlera to and Atlantis to our current times, I'm also was listening recently to some information from Corey Good, and he—if you haven't heard about his name—he's kind of a whistleblower from the secret space program, and he does mention some things about stargates, and he also made an interesting point that I just heard this week that I brought up on ET Yoga previously, was that my sort of theory was that we're sort of in a time dilation where inside this particular planetary system, we seem to be like in time dilation. That was one of the Stargate SG-1 episodes. And in this time dilation concept, what's inside the time dilation bubble, events take place, but outside of the bubble time moves at a different rate. And I think, and the reason he brought this up was in relation to the ascension process, that enough people, there weren't enough people quite ready on the planet. Let's say back in 2012, and the positive extraterrestrial forces are apparently slowing the process down, so that more people can get on board. I thought this was quite fascinating because it's the first time I've heard anybody else bring this up, besides the fact that I have done this on ET Yoga. And I think interesting is that the Stargate in SG-1 is shaped like a monumental giant standing ring, and the stationary outer ring and the concentric spinning inner ring work together to set coordinates that permit interstellar travel. And the outer ring contains 9 chevrons that lock on the inner ring, symbol or glyph, and 7 are used to set a destination within Earth's galaxy, and 8 are used to set a destination in another galaxy. And it's not known what the 9th chevron is for. The inside ring has 39 symbols called glyphs that refer to constellations. So for a normal address, the first 6 symbols set a coordinate in a volume of space, and the 7th refers to a point of origin. And when activated, the Stargate creates a wormhole between 2 Stargates that permits near instantaneous travel from one to another. And when the Stargate activates, a blue whoosh of energy emanates out from the gate, destroying anything in its path. After this initial burst of energy, an event horizon, a 2-dimensional energy field that permits entry to the wormhole and that looks like rippling blue water is created within the ring of the gate itself, and the traveler simply steps through. Anything that goes through the gate will arrive on the other side at the same velocity at which it entered. And apparently average travel time in our galaxy is like 3/10 of a second. And the Earth had at least 2 Stargates, and for centuries they lay buried, rendering them inoperative, one in Giza, Egypt, and the other in Antarctica. And could the highly popular television series Stargate SG-1 be more than science fiction? Well, secret space program whistleblower Corey Good claims it is based on real-life advanced travel technologies found all over the planet, solar system, and galaxy. And according to Good, the Stargates were built by a highly advanced ancient civilization not known even to the current extraterrestrial visitors to Earth. And another secret space program whistleblower, Henry Deacon, a.k.a. Arthur Newman, also claims that this is the navigational system and method used for portal travel. And Deacon began publicly disclosing his information regarding portals and Stargates back in an interview on Project Camelot in 2006. And another whistleblower, Dan Burrish, claims to have been a part of a covert team that went into Iraq to find its portal technologies. Deacon independently confirmed that a Stargate had been discovered in Iraq. And I might also, as a point of interest, mention that Earth's Stargate address is 853-8470-2460. And I find that it's quite a fascinating a topic. This whole idea of Stargate and portal inner space traveling. And, of course, there have been at least rumors that during, I guess, some of the Montauk days that on some recovered extraterrestrial craft, they've recovered what they call the chair. And apparently the chair operates with your consciousness. And so that when you're actually in the chair, your thoughts are amplified, and when you focus on a destination, a vortex appears, and you travel through that vortex to wherever it is you're thinking, much similar to the concept of astral traveling. And I think that's quite a kind of fascinating aspect of the chair. And another component of this is that it not only takes you to a destination, but you could also intend to go to a time in the future or a time in the past, so that actually timeline travel was also possible. Now, in my personal opinion, from watching Stargate SG-1 way back, it came out in the late 1990s, I believe, but I started watching it. I was over at somebody's house having dinner, and the show was on, and I'm looking at this program, and it's like bells were going off, like, hey, this is true. Oh, this is true. And it's kind of like it just blew me away. And in my opinion, in particular, I've mentioned this on ET Yoga before, that I think that this show has got so many things that are accurate that it's not even funny. And it also identified Stargate being found in Egypt, the first one, and also mentioned the one in Antarctica. So how was it possible that a program back in the 1990s would know what about information that's just coming out now? Well, in my opinion, whoever did that program or was giving information to that program definitely had time travel technology. That's my opinion. And by the way, I have other friends that are just as impressed with Stargate 1 as I am. It is just absolutely mind-boggling how many things are happening now or will be happening that are already mentioned in Stargate SG-1. And I have purchased the entire set of CDs because I go through them and then go through them again, because that's how fascinating I think the information is. So just wanted to pass that on to our listeners. If you haven't heard about Stargate SG-1, it's worth checking out. And moving on to, another topic that's kind of related to ancient information and ancient history is the whole concept of monatomics. And, of course, monatomics, I used to say, was the topic almost nobody knows about, because they're high-spin electrons that work as superconductors between dimensions. That's also been called the elixir of life, the philosopher's stone, or white powder gold. And in my opinion, it's one of the greatest discoveries of the century, or should I say rediscovery, as it was known as the mana in biblical times. And it was also not only the process of making the white powder gold, but it was also involved with turning metals to gold. And I highly recommend that you check out David Hudson. That's Hudson. David Hudson's lectures 1, 2, and 3 on the internet. And it's quite a fascinating story about the rediscovery of this concept. And he actually mentions in one of his lectures that he states that, I quote, "I can tell you that people who have taken it at 2 milligram injections, within 2 hours, their white blood cell count goes from 2,500 to 6,500 white blood cells. And I can tell you that stage 4 cancer patients have taken it orally, and after 45 days have no cancer anywhere in the body." And I think it's absolutely fascinating what the potential medical aspects of monatomics are. And what does it do in the body? Well, it literally corrects the DNA by a process equivalent of a denaturing solution. The DNA relaxes and recombines corrected. So all diseases that originate with a problem with the DNA can be corrected. And to me, this is just, I mean, monatomics have so many implications in the health field and actually, you know, in the spiritual field as well. The ancients knew of this process of turning base metals to gold, and the residue is white powder gold, which contains the monatomic elements of rhodium and iridium. And by the way, rhodium and iridium are also in flaxseed oil. And these elements were in the first matter called Prima Matra, and a portion of the Vedic text was sent to Hudson by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, a nuclear physicist who knows of this work. And it is from about 2000 BC, and it says you can take mercury and divide mercury and divide mercury and divide mercury until you divide it into its essence, and you actually get a white powder of mercury. And the way you test the mercury to see if it's ready for ingestion is you heat it in air, and if it turns to gold, then it's ready for ingestion. And they knew this in 2000 BC. And the ancient Sumerians and Egyptians also had knowledge of this, as did many secret mystery schools. And clinical white powder gold is now being made and sold. And, of course, too much would not be good, so I suggest you go to, and I quote here, Spiritual Nature of Ethereum Gold. And that's information. It's a commentary by Thoth concerning safe-taking of this substance. It was actually used in the rites of passage way back in Egyptian times, and the substance can help make a transition to higher states of consciousness if done properly and with caution. And there was a company, I believe, I'm trying to remember, I think it was called Ascension Alchemy, that I thought was a very good source. Of course, there's lots of bogus stuff out there on the Internet, and obviously you can't really test the materials you're buying to see if they're the real thing or not. But I think it's really a fascinating subject. It's called ORMES, O-R-M-E-S, Orbitally Rearranged Monatomic Elements. And there is a certain trace amount of them in a natural vegetarian diet. They're in things such as sea salt and kale and aloe vera plants and almonds are loaded with it. Amazing Welch's grape juice apparently has monatomics. It's something that wasn't even traceable, and you needed really amazing equipment even to trace this stuff. But it has amazing impacts, especially with respect to, in my opinion, healing and curing disease. And, of course, it's also been called the Philosopher's Stone. So I guess maybe for the first time in ET Yoga, I'm going to share with you what I know about the Philosopher's Stone. And most of the real good information, I think, that I've picked up came from Cosmic Awareness. And the Cosmic Awareness is channeled information that you can look up, actually, on the Internet. And I found it rang true to me that the secret of all of this alchemy, or the Philosopher's Stone, is actually human urine. And in the old texts back from the 1600s, when some of the guys that were involved with it used to write about it, they used kind of code words and different names. They didn't call it for what it was worth, or what it really is. And but the secret to the whole thing is human urine. And I can tell you a little bit about the process that I've kind of put pieces together from different places. But and here's the process if you're interested. Basically, you need a flask, a glass flask that has no corners, so it's got rounded edges, and you place urine in this during a lunar eclipse. And interesting to note, apparently, that during a lunar eclipse, the matrix is down. So I think that might have something to do with why this is the proper time. So the urine's in the flask, and then you need a place to put it because it sits open for 40 days. And then at the end of 40 days, you seal the flask with a wooden cork and then seal it with wax. And basically, then the trick is you leave it sit for a year, and it will eventually turn into a very darkish red color. And then the next stage after that, it will leave a residue in the bottom of the flask that looks kind of like feta cheese. And that's basically your philosopher's stone. And the trick here is that that flask must, for an entire year, must be kept at a temperature slightly more than 78 degrees, like 78 to 80 degrees. And that's not easy to accomplish. If you think about people that live in cold climates, or that, you know, you can experience power failures or this, that, and the other thing. I think the best idea I've ever heard is to place the flask in a fruit oven and just set the temperature for like 78, 79 degrees. And then the only problem there is you need to make sure that if there's any kind of power failures and it's cold outside or it gets cold where you are, that you need some kind of a backup that'll kick in your power when it goes out. So it's not super, super complicated. I suggest you look up cosmic awareness and creating the Philosopher's Stone on the Internet. And he goes, there's quite a lot of information there. And then what you would do with the white powder eventually is just take small amounts and see how that works. And I guess the other aspect of that is the changing lead to gold. And for that process, basically what you need is a little, an iron electric pot that they're fairly cheap. You also need to have some real lead, not fake. So like tire weights from wheels work. So you need to melt those down inside the iron it can be held in your hand. It's just a piece of iron that looks like a large cup, and melt the lead down. And the idea then would be you'd need a sort of a shape that you can pour this into eventually to cool. That's not gonna, that will be able to withstand the temperature of melted lead. And the idea here being is if you sprinkle in the white powder gold, it will turn the lead into gold. And how it does that is by two frequencies can't exist in the same space at the same time. So what happens is that the higher frequency wins out, and the gold is created because of the the only element on the planet that has a right hand electron spin. And there's actually, according to the cosmic awareness information, there's actually a picture of a piece of metal that they have in a museum in Britain. And I've actually seen the picture, but I've looked for it this week and I can't find it anymore on the Internet, but I used to be able to find it. And it does show a piece of about a 3-ounce chunk of lead that's half gold, half lead, half gold. So looks to me like definitely proof that the process did exist. Now, according to information from Thoth, in Atlantean times, this was common knowledge. And then when after the downfall of Atlantis, some of the survivors went to Egypt. Thoth did take a group there as well. And if you think about it, Egypt and gypsies, there's a link there. The first gypsies were Egyptians, and they were descendants from Atlantis, and they actually had knowledge, some of them, of this process. And some of them actually worked for royalty, and people were interested in this at one time. And then I guess it became throughout down the road a few centuries became kind of illegal to be involved with that kind of thing. So then there were all these sort of secret groups that were involved with this alchemical process, and changing lead to gold. So in my opinion, this is not a myth. It's this is factual information. And I'd also, in terms of checking out things that were historically factual or not, another factual way to do that is to check out the Akashic Record. And I guess a while back, Teal Swan gave some information about the Akashic Record. And I think it's one of the best things she's put out in terms of information, so I'm going to share that with our listening audience. The Akashic Record, or symbolic representation that the brain uses to represent the fact that every thought which has ever been thought exists. The Akashic Record is the collective consciousness. It has been referred to as the mind of God. And it happens to contain the information in the energetic vibration of every thought which has ever been thought in any way, and all universes that have ever been since the first division of oneness or source. It also contains a bit of future, in that from where you stand right now, you have paths of probability which extend past your lifetime. The future is always a vibrational match to the present, and so if you change a thought in the present, the future paths change. When we in human consciousness often think of this storage of thought, we associate it with a library, because that is what we in our human lifespan see as a collection of information. When people visit these nonlinear dimensions, the experience of being there is being pulled into linear understanding, so that which is not linear is being formatted in a linear way by the brain when you come back into the third dimensional reality. The entire experience is experienced as sorting through records or images, so an image library of sorts. Dimensions are divided in terms of vibration. They are not a spatial concept. In reality, all dimensions exist on top of one another in the same space. They are just different vibrations overlapped one on the other. So you are existing on all dimensions at all times. The general consensus is that this information is stored in the fifth dimension, but Teal believes information is stored on the dimension it corresponds to. So you can think of the entire Akashic Record as a giant library, and this library is source. The brain is probably thinking of a building, because the brain can't understand the concept of no beginning and no end, and it can't understand the concept of no borders. So let's call source the ultimate dimension. All the dimensions within this library could be seen as different levels within a library, and there's different information relative to each level. So each successive floor in the library is more expansive than the floor below it. So each successive floor contains all the information in the floors below it, including new information relative to the expansion or the expansive totality of unity consciousness. Accessing the Akashic Records has to do with you increasing your vibratory rate so as to be a match to one floor, and then the next floor, and then the next, and so on. In the fourth dimension, which is the one just outside the third dimension, we have access to every thought which has ever been thought relative to this single lifetime from your birth to your death. It also contains your thought form, which is basically the energetic self concept you have of you, which is why when you get out of body in the fourth dimension, you'll experience your energy body, which is an energy duplicate. In the fifth dimension, every possible timeline from the single points that you've chosen for your third dimensional life exist. In the sixth dimension, you are unlimited by space and time, and so you can instantly experience a new timeline within that fifth dimension from any of the probabilities in the fifth dimension. So so instantly you could switch to the outcome of what you would have, what would have occurred if something back in your infancy had been totally radically changed. So if one of the probability paths that you didn't end up taking, say you were 6 months old, you could chase that all the way to the end and instantly experience the end result of that particular probability path. In the seventh dimension, the sixth dimension is treated almost like a single point. So there is no timeline anymore. The sixth dimension is one point where all possibilities in terms of timelines in our universe and all possible endings for our universe are contained. They're contained in a single point called infinity. So all possible timelines which could have or will have occurred since the birth of this universe, since the Big Bang, were contained in the seventh dimension. Now, how could there be more than infinity? Well, the answer is there can be other infinities, other universes, created under different conditions, and when other universes are created under different conditions, there are different laws which apply to that universe. So in the eighth dimension, that's where you begin to have access to the infinity relative to this lifetime of this universe as it relates to the infinity of another universe or universes. And in the ninth dimension, you have access to being able to instantly experience any probability path from any timeline being in any universe instantaneously. The tenth dimension is the top level, and what you're going to be experiencing with the tenth dimension is all probabilities of all universes in the ninth dimension, and all of those probabilities of all those universes in the ninth dimension are treated now as a single point. Then you are the library itself. Outside of the 10th dimension, you are entering the zero-point field. So in the 10th dimension, all universes from the 9th dimension are treated as a single point. Past the 10th dimension, you don't even have a single point. What you have is the zero-point field, which is a sea of probability waves, which we would call source. And that is the totality of collective consciousness, not the expression of that consciousness. Most people refer to the Akashic record from the seventh dimension, which is where the frequencies of past lives exist. So that would be the totality of probabilities which have occurred for one soul from its origin in this universe to its end in this universe. So this is the seventh dimensional energy record. And like anything else, if you want to access the Akashic record, you're limited by your beliefs. So you access information in the Akashic record or these energetic frequencies by becoming a match to those frequencies first. So first you have to A, believe that they exist, and B, you have to believe that you can get there, and C, you have to structure all of your belief patterns so as to let go of third-dimensional reality in order to be a match to the Akashic record. So I know that's quite a lot of information kind of coming at you in a hurry there, but if you want to take your time and go through some of that, you can always go and visit the archives of ET Yoga, and you can do that by going to my website at etyoga.com. On the main page, there's a little tab there called Radio Archives. Just hit that archive and you can hear the archive of this program, which will be appearing there in a couple of days. I'd also like to take this opportunity to wish my listening audience my sincere best towards your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And nearing about this time in their program, I usually end up by sharing with you the Who Am I technique. And this is a technique that I picked up actually from Baba Ram Dass, also from Sri Ramana Maharshi. And it was kind of interesting, the information from Baba Ram Dass, because it appeared in a little known newspaper in British Columbia that was called the Georgia Strait, and in there he gave this technique, and well, I tried the technique, and first time I did it, bam, went right through the doorway. So I know it's a valid method to potentially experience higher levels of consciousness. And it's kind of also why I kind of like to share that at the end of our programs, because in my opinion, it is such a powerful technique. I might add that ET yoga, I like to call it the yoga of belief, because when it comes down to day-to-day practices, a lot of it is around this whole concept that thought creates, and that you create your outer experience in this third dimension with your beliefs and your definitions, your emotions, and your intentions, and it creates a perfect mirror or a match towards your reality experience. And it's also very tough if you're trying to realize certain concepts using the rational mind, because at higher levels of consciousness, I think even rational thinking can be an obstacle. And you get into more of a mindset where you just know the answer, or you ask the question and you get the answer. So you don't really need a backlog of memory so much. And also, as Sri Ramana Maharshi points out, the best direct method is the path of self-knowledge, or the path of self-inquiry. So to do this technique, the Who Am I technique, the best idea would be to try to get in the highest place you know how to get to. Now, if that's by doing your asanas and then pranayams and then some meditation, or if it's through other methods, use those other methods, get to the highest place you know how to get to, and then you put your full consciousness in the center of your forehead and ask the question, who am I? You're actually becoming that spot in the center of your forehead. And then you would state the following: I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am not my thoughts. I am not this spot. What spot?
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all.